current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Cervical cancer vaccine. The recommendation from national health experts has been that all girls from about the age of 12 should get the shot. Critics say we don't know enough about the long-term impact. Many parents are hesitant. Now there are studies into whether or not it works as advertised.
These are the first large studies presenting extensive data on the effectiveness of the Gardasil vaccine. In one group, it prevented 98% of precancerous lesions, in another 100%. But there are important footnotes. The longer a woman is sexually active, the greater the chances the vaccine won't work because it's ineffective when she already has been infected with one of the two virus strains it targets.
CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato in Washington. In Los Angeles County, firefighters struggle against the steep terrain in Hollywood Hills, hoping, expecting to get a handle on the wildfire that burns there. CBS's Steve Futterman says, meanwhile, an alleged killer arsonist is going on trial.
Raymond Lee Euler is accused of intentionally setting last fall's deadly Esperanza wildfire that killed five U.S. Forest Service workers. He was charged last year with five counts of first-degree murder. Now the Riverside County District Attorney says he will seek the death penalty. The DA calls Euler's action a callous disregard to the safety of the firefighters. During a preliminary hearing, witnesses testified that Euler boasted about setting the fires.
Wildfires on the other side of the country, too. Florida, polka-dotted with fires. Floods in the middle of the country, western Missouri. No deaths, but dozens of people have big trouble in their lives. Their homes along the Platte and Missouri rivers are flooded. Hundreds of people, in fact. The Missouri's a mile wider than it's supposed to be there. Andrea is the first named storm of the season. She's about 3 weeks early. Jamie Rome at the National Hurricane Center.
This has nothing to do with the upcoming season. It doesn't mean an active season. It doesn't mean an inactive season. It just means that we have a hybrid system that formed earlier than the June 1 official beginning of the hurricane season.
45-mile-an-hour winds off the Georgia coast, not considered a threat to land. No move from the Federal Reserve on interest rates, no change. It stays at 5.25%.
Now the Fed has got to really walk the tightrope and really examine the economic data coming in to see if the next move should be a rate cut or a rate hike.
That's CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus. On Wall Street today, the Dow gained nearly 54 points to close at almost 13,363. The Nasdaq was up 4.5 points, and oil prices at $61.55 a barrel were down 71 cents. The billboard said, "Life's short. Get a divorce." The billboard was decorated with pictures of a partially clothed man and woman. It was a billboard for a divorce lawyer in Chicago. The phones have been ringing, good for business, and complaints to City Hall. The billboard's been taken down. Chicago officials said they didn't have the right permits. This is CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas' newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 866-40-GO-NOW. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-40-GO-NOW for all the exciting details. That's 866-40-GO-NOW. Call now.
A British man who leaked confidential information to the press in an effort to embarrass President Bush some time back is going to jail.
It was a matter of conscience, the British civil servant told the court, explaining why he leaked a secret memo that reportedly quoted President Bush saying he'd like to bomb Arab TV station Al Jazeera. David Keogh said he didn't like Mr. Bush and wanted the memo to end up with John Kerry, who was running for president at the time. Both the White House and Downing Street denounced the claims. The memo was so secret, the trial was held in secret. Keogh and a parliamentary researcher were convicted of breaking Britain's Official Secrets Act. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
A wedding party of 30 people in Villach, Austria, danced and drank and ate till they were full. Then, just before dessert, they got up and left. All of them just got up and ran out the door. It took police to track down the frugal couple with the restaurant's bill. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Yo, so what'll it be?
A dozen pork chops, a couple of those strip steaks, 2 pounds of kielbasa, and a half ton of peace of mind.
That's it?
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford Lincoln and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. Because we notice everything. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection. You even get a vehicle history report, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. Now that's peace of mind.
And I like some pride of ownership, too.
See your dealer for limited warranty coverage details, or visit FordCPO.com.
Chances are your old computer can't run all the latest software. Get into Office Depot today for a huge assortment of the newest computers and software, plus wireless printers, flat panel monitors, memory solutions, and more. Don't risk slowing down your business. Let Office Depot lend you a hand.
Whoa, Office Depot can lend you a hand.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to today's edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. I am your humble host, Peter B. And my voice is a little raggedy today, but I want you to know I feel a lot better than I sound. We've got a lot to talk about over the next few hours, and I hope you can be with us for as much of the program as possible. We'll kick off our show with Congresswoman Maxine Waters, a Democrat from Los Angeles, who will join us here shortly. Also on today's program, Spencer Boyer from the Center for American Progress weighs in on the election results in France, where a conservative, Nicolas Sarkozy, has been elected. Also on today's program, a look at Wolfie's World Bank and whether Paul Wolfowitz can hold on to the presidency there. Sameer Dosani will join us about an hour from now. Also, we're going to take a look at a potential breakthrough in the negotiations with Iran over its desire for a nuclear weapon. And Kara Ong from the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation will be our guest. And Mike Ergo, a Marine who served in Iraq, he was on with us on Monday, and I felt there was more to talk about. So he returns to kick off the Free Speech Zone today at 5 o'clock Pacific. You're welcome to call the program toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, either in the Free Speech Zone or during one of our interview segments. The number again, 888-573-8372. And you can always email me 24/7, peter@peterbcollins.com. And we try not to let a little laryngitis get in the way of a radio talk show. We also try not to let electronic glitches get in our way. Congresswoman Maxine Waters is trying to call into the studio, and our equipment is hanging up on her. So Katrina is trying to sort that out right now and see if we can get her on a line that you're able to hear her on. And so that's what we're working on here at the Peter B. Collins Show. I want to talk with Congresswoman Waters about the current debate over funding the war in Iraq. And, of course, she supports a cutoff of funds She has put together a bill with Congresswoman Barbara Lee and Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey and others in the Out of Iraq caucus, which, of course, has not been able to see the light of day in the Congress because Speaker Pelosi has been focused on the supplemental bill with the timelines and the benchmarks that, of course, were made optional by the Senate and the Conference Committee, and then ultimately vetoed by the President anyway. So it's a very interesting time in Washington. We do expect that later this week, Democrats will pass out of the House a resolution which will fund the war for only 60 days. And so that's where things stand right now. Looks like Congresswoman Waters will not be able to join us right now. She has had to return to the House floor for a vote, and so we missed a window of opportunity there. I would appreciate it if you'd call in right now, because my voice is kind of weak. I could talk to you for another 20 minutes, but I'm not sure people want to listen to that just by itself. So give us a call, and we'll also be able to test out the phone system here and make sure that we've got it working. You know the toll-free number, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. That's our toll-free number, 888-5-PETER-B. And one of the things I wanted to talk to Maxine Waters about is the lead editorial in today's New York Times. Let me read part of it to you. Last year, congressional Democrats allowed the Bush administration to ram through one of the worst laws in the nation's history, the Military Commissions Act of 2006. This year, the Democrats pledged to use their new majority to begin repairing the profound damage the law has done to the nation's justice system and global image. But there are disturbing signs their pledge may fall victim to the same tactical political calculations and Bush administration propagandizing that allowed this scandalous law to pass in the first place. Rewriting the act should start with one simple step, restoring to prisoners of war, of the war on terror. Now, right there, I have to ding the New York Times. Why would they use a phrase like that? Restoring to detainees the fundamental right to challenge their detention in a real court. So far, promised measures to restore habeas corpus have yet to see the light of day, and they may remain buried unless Democratic leaders make them a priority and members of both parties vote on principle, not out of fear of attack ads. President Bush turned habeas corpus into a partisan issue by declaring that the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay, even innocent ones, do not deserve a hearing. Lawmakers who objected were painted as friends of terrorists. But let's be clear. There is nothing conservative or tough on terrorism in selectively stripping people of their rights. Suspending habeas corpus is an extreme notion on the radical fringes of democratic philosophy. As four retired military chief prosecutors from the Navy, the Marines, and the Army pointed out to Congress, holding prisoners without access to courts merely feeds Al-Qaeda's propaganda machine, increases the risk to the American military, and sets a precedent by which other governments could justify detaining American civilians without charges or appeal. And I might add, it also opens the door to torture. Because we have removed the prohibitions on torture in our military system, or, you know, turned a blind eye to the rules. And, you know, I will not be surprised in the future if enemies who detain Americans don't use Gitmo techniques on them. The editorial goes on. Consider some of the other wild-eyed liberals calling on Congress to restore habeas corpus. By the way, that's tongue-in-cheek. It's irony. William Sessions, director of the FBI under the first President Bush. David Keene, head of the American Conservative Union, the National Association of Evangelicals. David Neff, the editor of Christianity Today, founded by Billy Graham, and a long list of others. There are a half dozen bills in the House and the Senate that would restore habeas corpus. But the Democratic leadership has not found a way to bring the issue to a vote. The first vehicle is the Defense Department's budget authorization bill. But Representative Ike Skelton, chair of the House Armed Services Committee, chose not to include habeas corpus in his baseline version of the measure, known as the Chairman's Mark, which will be taken up by the committee today. So that's a very strong editorial and one that reflects my views. As you know, I think the Military Commissions Act is one of the worst pieces of legislation ever to surface in this country in my lifetime, And I hope that the Democrats will make good on promises to fix it. But as the editorial suggests, we can't be real optimistic at this point, because it does seem like the, you know, the Democrats are pulling, well, I don't want to say they're pulling punches, but they are taking some care and operating in a pretty conservative manner, in my opinion. So that's one of the things we can talk about. If you'd like a call into the show, lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. That's our toll-free number here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And let's see, I wanted to share with you some disturbing information that came out of Washington today, courtesy of Brad Friedman at bradblog.com, and that is that the Holt bill, which is not perfect, and in fact includes still the use of DREs, touchscreen voting machines, in elections in the United States, they remain approved in the current version of the Holt bill. And there are other issues that come into play as well. Also, the House Administration Committee rejected election challenges from Clint Curtis and others in Florida. And this is really disappointing, because we've talked to Clint Curtis. It does appear that he has established that he had far more votes than he was credited with in the final count. And yet the Administration Committee accepted the protest of Christine Jennings, which is fine. And rejected Clint Curtis's, which I do not support. Rob Timmons joins us now. He's with Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Rob, thanks for being available for us today. We had you scheduled, then Congresswoman Waters said she could join us, and thanks for thanks for being there. Also, my voice is failing me today, so I'm very happy to have a guest so I don't have to monologue and bore my listeners or put them all to sleep.
Not a problem, Peter.
So thanks for checking in with us. I wanted to talk with you, first of all, about the debate in Washington right now. And I know IAVA is a pro-troops nonprofit, and I don't expect you to take explicit positions on political or partisan sides. But I'd like to know from your perspective, if the idea of 60-day incremental authorizations or funding bills is something that you can live with. It's certainly not ideal, but to be fair, the Bush administration has not been funding this war on an annualized basis to begin with.
Right. It is true. I mean, it seems like this war has just been funded by emergency supplementals as it is anyway. So, you know, the whole 60-day funding bill, I mean, yes, you know, it hurts the Pentagon in one way for long-term things, but in terms of just funding the Iraq war, I don't think it makes all that much of a difference in the long run.
Mm-hmm. So. And, again, I'm not trying to draw you into the partisan skirmishes, mm-hmm. but do you believe that the U.S. Really does need to radically revise its strategies in Iraq? And do you think the Bush administration can be persuaded to do that?
It does need to radically revise its strategy in Iraq, because currently, you know, the strategy isn't working, and the surge is an attempt at it's almost like a Band-Aid, you know, solution, and it's a solution that's yet to be, you know, proven that will work, and who knows? Even General Petraeus said it's a solution that may, you know, if it is indeed a solution, it's a solution that we'll only know after a year or more. And I'm not sure if the political will is there to sustain this, you know, this war, you know, through the years coming.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of on the ground, I mean, we are just one player in the civil war. And it is indeed a civil war.
Thank you.
And, yeah.
That's honest.
Since we're just one player, I mean, it's basically, there are at least six different wars going on in Iraq at the same time, you know, between all the sectarian groups and the religious, you know, divides, and between different tribal sectarian
right.
violence.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, to be a part of that, you know, there's no real control going on the ground, or there's just a figment of control, just mm-hmm. a sense of it. And unfortunately, we really need to, take a step back and say, can this be resolved with military force? And everybody right now says, no, it can't be resolved with military. There needs to be a political solution.
Right.
So,
Rob, let me stop here. We're late for a break here, and we'll come back and talk further in just a moment. Rob Timmons is with us from Iraq and Afghanistan, Veterans of America. He served in the 101st Airborne in Iraq. And we'll get more commentary from him after a break here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
May 14th, 9 a.m. to noon. Thanks for joining us. The Ed Schultz Show, where America comes to talk.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, meet Jim Ross, president of National Real Estate Holdings, as he shares his thoughts and ideas on investing in real estate. Get ready for our big event with Jim and National Real Estate Holdings and IPX 1031 to learn about how to use a 1031 exchange to invest in real estate properties. It's coming up on Tuesday, May 22nd at the Santa Clara Marriott starting at 6 p.m. For more information about the show, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, Ed Schultz here. Starting May 14th, the Ed Schultz Show moves to 9 a.m. to noon right here on KRXA 540. So join us for the best in talk radio, news, commentary, and your calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be on the Ed Schultz Show, 9 a.m. to noon, starting May 14th, right here on AM 540 KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Katrina Rill. And we're talking with Rob Timmons of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. As I mentioned, he served with the 101st Airborne Division in Iraq, did a tour of about 11 months. How does it feel to have served 11 months, Rob, and now see the Secretary of Defense saying that a one-year deployment will be at least 15 months, perhaps 18 months going forward?
It's just horrible. I mean, to know that, I mean, I know I was going crazy after 11 months, but I mean, and I was single, luckily, but I mean, with soldiers that have families, you know, wives or husbands and children at home, it's gotta be heartbreaking, especially, you know, 15 months away from them. You're missing like two holidays, you know, or all those birthdays and everything, and being torn from your family for that long. And that's why, divorce rates are going up, and, it's really extraordinarily tough on these soldiers and their families.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, this is not the first year that many of them have been away. My old division is now getting ready to go back for a third time in Iraq, and one of the brigades is actually did some time in Afghanistan as well. Mm-hmm. So this will be their fourth tour, and you know, to have that much time away, it breaks families apart, and it changes people forever in a negative way.
And, Rob, the tornado that flattened that little town in Kansas last week points up that Kansas is strapped to respond to multiple emergencies right now.
Sure.
Because it has National Guard troops still on the ground in Iraq, and even those who have returned did not come back with all the equipment that was shipped over to support them. And so it's a human resources and materiel issue.
Oh, it totally is. And all the governors, it's not just in Kansas, and that's just the latest incident of it, but I mean, even with Hurricane Katrina, Louisiana was hurting, and much of the Gulf Coast, you know, had equipment and personnel that were for their National Guards, you know, deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. Basically, I mean, the latest figures is less than 20% of National Guard units in the United States are prepared to respond to a domestic disaster of any sort. You know, in terms of equipment, I mean, they don't have the trucks, they don't have the people to respond to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that's a huge problem. And unfortunately, the administration, you know, says, you know, puts the governors at blame, saying, oh, you didn't ask us for the required, authorization. But, you know, if the material isn't there in the first place, it doesn't matter if they asked or not. You know, the blame game, you know, needs to stop. You know, the National Guard commander, Lieutenant General Stephen Blum, just needs to get, you know, the people and the equipment back that's been left in Iraq and Afghanistan so that we can respond to forest fires, to tornadoes, to riots, to anything that might come up, you know, in here in the United States.
Yeah.
We need to protect the people back here, not just send tens of thousands of troops over to a civil war in another country.
Mm-hmm. And Rob, as you hear the debate going on in Washington, and one side says, you know, we support the troops and kind of tries to present it that the other side doesn't, I find that really offensive because, number one, the $100 or so billion is only partly for "quote unquote" the troops, but also I hate to see them used as a political ping pong ball.
Oh, it's so true. They say if we don't, you know, fund the troops, you know, the troops are not. If we don't fund this war the way, you know, we're not supporting the troops, and that's really just it's totally ignorant. The troops. The troops, you know, are there to do a mission. They are there for they're protecting our right to debate, you know. So, you know, when people say, you know, just by debating, you know, how much money mm-hmm. is being, you know, spent on these wars, you know, by just having the debate is not supporting the troops. I mean, that's totally, you know, rubbish.
Yeah.
It really is.
Rob Timmons, thank you for joining us today. We're out of time, but we'll talk again.
All right. Thank you, Peter.
Rob Timmons, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
This is Todd the Taxi Driver. And yesterday, I told you you should go take a walk. Well, what did I mean by that? Here, let me try to explain. Let's use high gas prices as an example. Most people feel like big oil is ripping us off and sticking it to us, and unfortunately, there's nothing we can do about it. But I think there is something we can do about it. We can use these community walks as a platform and a way to show big oil or whoever we're unhappy with that we want change. So how do we put something like this together? Well, I suggest call your PTA, talk to the people at church. This would even work with people you just meet at the grocery store. By doing this, you'll meet like-minded people, you can coordinate your efforts to make change, and you'll get some exercise at the same time, which will make you healthier and make you feel better. This is Todd the Taxi Driver. Go out and walk for change.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with crumble stew. A side of couscous and a Bible solution. Open at 7. Every day, have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Yeah! And I am Foghorn Collins, sitting in for Peter B. today. And I'm afraid it's getting worse. The only thing that works for me when I get laryngitis is single malt scotch. And through a tragic failure to plan ahead,
I have no scotch, even the ordinary stuff, here at my secret studio. So the voice is what I've got today, and we'll see what we can do with it. Spencer Boyer joins us this half hour. He's Director of International Law and Diplomacy at the Center for American Progress in Washington. And he's got a very impressive background. He was the Executive Director and War Powers Initiative Director at the Constitution Project based at Georgetown University's Public Policy Institute. He's a graduate of Wesleyan University, got a law degree at New York University, and it says here in a nonspecific way that he was a corporate affairs director at a Fortune 500 company here in San Francisco. Spencer Boyer, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, thank you for having me.
And what was that Fortune 500 company? I'm curious.
It was a Providian Financial Corporation doing, trying to do corporate social responsibility and help develop their ethics program.
Yeah, well, Providian was a very interesting company, providing credit cards for people who couldn't ordinarily get them. And it did tank at a certain point, but along the way, there was a lot of good responsible programming that was going on and quite a bit of philanthropy, too.
Oh, yes, and I think the company after a while worked to develop a little bit more of a corporate social responsibility effort, also not only in California but elsewhere, and I was working a lot on helping develop their code of vendor conduct for their overseas operations. So it was an interesting time.
Yeah, it sure was. Well, that's not why you're here today. We asked you to comment on the elections in France that have propelled Nicolas Sarkozy to the presidency there. And he is described as a conservative and appears to have at least postured as a kind of Bush-type character. There's a photograph of him horseback riding in the national park there at the delta of the river there down south of Lyon. And he's a little more complicated, probably, than the U.S. media can give him credit for. Take a minute here to describe Sarkozy and his background and what you think he will do as the new leader of France.
Sure. As you mentioned, he is conservative. But he is a bit of an iconoclast. He's not traditionally right-wing in all areas. To begin with, he's different than most French presidential candidates. He's the son of a Hungarian immigrant. He's a graduate of a non-elite university in France, and most of the politicians in France have graduated from a few of the most elite colleges there. He's a lawyer by training. He's very brash and tough-talking, pragmatic, combative in many ways, and he got himself into some trouble a couple of years ago during the riots that took place in France, where he called many of the young rioters who were young immigrants scum, and he's never really been able to recover from that with those groups. But
and some of those people took to the streets to acknowledge his victory this week.
Well, a lot of the folks who were rioting in the days following the election were a little different than those who were rioting back in 2005. Many of those who were rioting in the last couple of days were young white youth who were just protesting his election. But it was a mix as well. But back in 2005, it was primarily young immigrants or children of immigrants who were protesting in a number of ways and were just generally angry over sort of discrimination and alienation that they felt in France. Sarkozy, while he does have some very traditional conservative aspects about him, promising to cut taxes, reduce deficits, shrink the government, loosen restrictive labor laws, he also embraces affirmative action, and he also is very pro-American in many ways, and has expressed his admiration for American society. So he's a real interesting mix of attitudes, and has an extremely different background than most French politicians.
Mm-hmm. And according to a nice little chart in the New York Times yesterday, Sarkozy in this runoff
won a majority of the votes in virtually every demographic group except two, as I recall. One was baby boomers, roughly 50 to 65, and the other was presumably young workers in the 20 to 30 range. Describe what you think those results mean in terms of Sarkozy's alleged intentions to roll back some of the benefits of the socialist aspects of the government of France, which includes 6 weeks vacation, very difficult to get fired once you're on the job, and a lot of other issues that certainly favor the working class in France, but are seen as drags on the economy by the business sector.
Oh, well, you're exactly right. I think that many in France are, on the one hand, fearful of change, and I think some of the demographics that were supportive of Sarkozy are those who are fearful of certain social changes. He had very strong support of those over 60 years old, as well as city dwellers. You know, those folks are afraid of increased crime in France, and Sarkozy has campaigned very much on the law and order platform. Many of those who are older in France are fearful of the social changes, fearful of increased immigration in France, and I think that his tough talk on clamping down on immigration and having tougher criteria for immigrants bringing their families into France might have resonated with them. Where Ségolène Royal was very popular among artisans and shopkeepers and rural voters, who I think are more attached to the France of old and keeping a certain social network and system that's been in place, and they're fearful of Sarkozy's proposed changes. But I think in the end, France showed that it was more fearful of the status quo than of change, and that's why Sarkozy won.
Mm-hmm. And did Royale ever have a chance, in your opinion? She almost seemed to concede shortly after the general election that left her as the challenger to Sarkozy.
I think she did have a chance, and most folks believe that it's not because of the fact that she was a woman and France has not had a woman president, but that there were some slip-ups in her campaign. Many believe that she was not specific enough in her platform, and in the last debate in particular, Sarkozy, I think, made light of that and really attacked her on not being concrete enough. And I think that in the end, the French voters wanted somebody who was concrete and had a real air of competence, even if they didn't agree with everything that he was proposing, even though they don't like many aspects of his personality. Many of the interviews with folks after the elections who voted for Sarkozy, you know, they were saying that yes, they're a little scared of his brash ways, but that he seems to be someone who will really work to foster change in France. Where Ségolène Royal was very much the anti-change candidate in a number of ways, and she really had a platform of continuing more of the status quo in France, large spending programs, expanding France's massive welfare state, and while that was appealing to a segment of the population, not enough folks believe that was the best way for France to move forward in a globalized world.
Spencer Boyer is with us from the Center for American Progress here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking about the change of the guard in France with the elections concluded in the past week. And is this a sea change, Spencer, where the generation that has essentially led France since World War II has been retired, and some of the policies that really were quite popular in terms of the socialist infrastructure, healthcare, job security, generous vacation benefits, are those all going to be rolled back, and do you see that as part of a generational change?
I do think there is a generational difference there. You have folks like Nicolas Sarkozy who are much more part of an internationalized world, and he campaign very much on the idea that France has to change in order to compete in the 21st century. I think that's going to resonate a little bit more with some of the younger voters in terms of a sea change and France actually carrying out some of the proposals that Sarkozy has put forward. That's to be seen. A lot will depend on the legislative elections in June and who Sarkozy is able to put in as prime minister. And it's generally the party that is ruling that is going to have that prime minister. So there is a chance that there could be a cohabitation, which would put a damper on Sarkozy's ability to push forward some of these reforms. But also, as we've seen over the decades in France, that sometimes very well-intentioned proposals, even very minor ones, are met with great resistance in France, where you have crippling strikes and major demonstrations. So a lot will depend on whether Sarkozy and his government is able to withstand those things and stick to their guns in pushing through some reforms that I think France probably needs in order to be more competitive, but that many don't want. And sometimes a very small minority of folks in France can bring the whole country to a standstill, and you have the administration retreating in the face of that.
Now, just a few years ago, Jean-Marie Le Pen made quite an impact with an anti-immigrant nationalist appeal. He's from a minor party, but it really scared the French people how much support he was able to roll up in the preceding election cycle. And I'm just looking online here, and here's a quote from a French person saying that Sarkozy stole our ideas and stole our votes. That is from a citizen who is described as a supporter of Le Pen.
Well, Le Pen was very extreme and has run for president several times. As you mentioned, he was able to make it through to the second round of the two-stage voting in France in the last election cycle, and that scared everyone, and you had Jacques Chirac winning in a landslide over Le Pen. As we see even in our own system here in the United States, the messenger matters, and Le Pen was very much of a single-issue kind of candidate who focused so much on immigration, so much on the fear of change and trying to, I think, play on people's fears, that there's no way he could really gain more than, you know, a small portion of the French support in running for president, where Nicolas Sarkozy, as we've been discussing, is a much more complicated, diverse character. And while Sarkozy is probably no more liked among young minority youth in France than Le Pen is, he, you know, is also someone who is more a little bit more nuanced, has a broader package of proposals than Le Pen ever had, and as I was mentioning before, believes in affirmative action and thinks that France needs to do more to bring young minority youth into the fold. But I don't know if he'll ever really be able to recover from his statement that has brought him a lot of hatred among those communities.
The scum comment.
The scum comment, exactly.
And if loosely we compare Jean-Marie Le Pen to Tom Tancredo, for example, then that would place Sarkozy a little more into the center. Would you come up with a comparison to him in American politics today?
Well, I think that with most European candidates, except for the extreme far right like Jean-Marie Le Pen, most that are considered conservative candidates, probably by American standards, would be maybe a little right of center, you know, maybe a moderate Republican, for example, as opposed to a far right wing Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are considered, you know, to the left would be to the far left. So I would say with Sarkozy, I'm sure he would be a Republican if he were in the United States. But I doubt he would be a extreme hardline Republican because of of some of his stances on social issues.
Mm-hmm.
And another example of that beyond affirmative action is the fact that he is very much a proponent of taking strong action against global warming.
All right, let's take a break and we'll pick up there. Spencer Boyer is our guest, Director of International Law and Diplomacy at the Center for American Progress. We're talking about the election results that brought Nicolas Sarkozy to the presidency in France. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Make this Mother's Day special. Treat mom to a delicious slice of Mexico at La Flor de Oaxaca, Carmel's only Mexican restaurant. Delight your senses and your palate in particular. Discover La Flor de Oaxaca this Mother's Day and meet chef owner Conrado Geronimo. La Flor de Oaxaca is located at the southwest corner of Dolores at 5th in Carmel by the Sea and is normally open Monday through Saturday for lunch and dinner from 11 to 9. And this Sunday, May 13th, Mother's Day, they'll be open from 4:30 to 9. Mom will love enchiladas San Felipe's or enchiladas verdes with a wine from the house list. La Flor de Oaxaca's mission is to serve you the best Mexican cuisine with an emphasis on the unique and delicious flavors of Oaxaca. La Flor de Oaxaca will be open this Sunday, Mother's Day. Make Mom's Day extra special with delicious Mexican food and live marimba music at La Flor de Oaxaca from 4:30 to 9. Don't miss the fun and delicious food.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes away from the hour. My guest is Spencer Boyer. He's Director of International Law and Diplomacy at the Center for American Progress. And we're getting his comments on the change of the guard in France as conservative Nicolas Sarkozy has been elected president over socialist Ségolène Royal. And Spencer, tell me from your point of view and from the reporting you've heard from France, to what extent was this election about the United States, about George W. Bush, and about the war in Iraq?
I think it was more about domestic issues in France than about France's relationship with the U.S. You know, there's certainly a lot of concern in France right now regarding the economy. It's been weighed down for decades by slow growth and high unemployment, suburban decay, and you know, I think the French people are very concerned about that, and Sarkozy, for more of the population, than not believe that he was the key to trying to move forward and put France in a stronger position to compete in an economic way in the 21st century. And also French concerns about crime, immigration, and so forth. He spoke more to their concerns than Ségolène Royal did. But certainly France is placed within the EU, and Nicolas Sarkozy wants a stronger role for France within the EU, as well as French-U.S. relations did come up. Sarkozy was criticized soundly by Ségolène Royal and other candidates for being too much of a puppet of the American government, and he was ridiculed for, you know, donning a cowboy hat and so forth, looking like President Bush in one photo op, and some of his words have come back to haunt him a little bit in the campaign. He's mentioned how much he loves Hemingway and Sylvester Stallone. He's said that we were the greatest democracy in the world, but he stuck to his guns on that point. He told France that it needs to get over its hang-up regarding working with the United States on a global agenda, and that there are many things within the American system for the French to admire.
Mm-hmm. And I certainly do understand to some extent, you know, as much as I can as an American who enjoys being in France as a tourist, and, you know, I follow some of their politics as reported in the American media. But I am aware of the immigration issues and the burgeoning population of young people who are of an ethnic, they may have been born in France, but their ethnic background is from elsewhere. And there is a large Muslim population that is growing as well. And when you contrast that with the history of France going to greater lengths than most European nations to protect their language and their culture, they have a whole commission that either approves or rejects additions to the language, particularly those that creep in from English. And that's just one example of how they have worked so hard to protect what they consider to be the richness of their culture. And so there are, I guess, real concerns, and this is reflected by the electorate that turned to a relative hardliner on immigration and those issues.
Well, I think that's right. France does have a problem in terms of integrating those in its society who have not been French for generations. As you mentioned, there are many children of immigrants who are French by passport, who do not feel accepted in France, who have extremely high levels of unemployment and social isolation. You have the suburbs in France, which are probably the equivalent of the inner cities within the United States, that are just teeming with unemployed youth, males in particular, who feel so disaffected from society that they often, you know, become involved in antisocial endeavors, and which makes the cycle more difficult to break. As you also mentioned, you have a very large Muslim population in France. Obviously, just as with minority populations in the United States, they are not monolithic. There are a lot of differences within Muslim communities, generational differences, and so forth. But certainly, there are many disaffected youth who are able to be recruited now by those who are looking for Muslims that they can turn into more radical, to have more radical beliefs and be more anti-West. So I think that's France's failure to do more to make sure that all of its citizens and those who are in the country are able to be a part of the system. And right now they're not doing a great job at it. But that fear, I think, has led some to be attracted to Sarkozy's more hardline proposals with regards to immigration, and they feel that he would do a better job of controlling that than Ségolène Royal would have.
Well, Spencer, thank you for your comments today, and I look forward to talking with you again when I can actually talk.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, my pleasure. That's Spencer Boyer from the Center for American Progress. Ladies and gentlemen, this voice is not going to last, so I've asked our folks at the Satellite Uplink to bring you some best of Peter B. Collins for the next 2 hours. I'm going to sip some scotch, try to get the voice back, and hopefully we'll be live again tomorrow here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for listening.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Too much rain brings floods to the Midwest.
In some parts of Missouri, floodwaters recede. In other parts, people await Mother Nature's wrath. I'm Peter King.
Too little means wildfires in the southeast.
We're optimistic. We always are. We're Floridians. We're about the most resilient people you'll ever meet.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Weather extremes are affecting life across the United States. Unrelenting storms have brought high wind, tornadoes, and torrential rain to parts of the Midwest. The Missouri River has come over the tops of at least 20 levees.
I'm Peter King in Levesey, Missouri. Mayor Phyllis Dickman is a lot like her neighbors. Her house is underwater.
Where I live, we can get in a boat in my front yard and boat down behind the church.
For some, she says, this is as bad as the 1993 floods. For others, not so much. And amazingly, Dickman says she didn't ask for outside help until today because she says people here could handle it on their own.
We're hardy people. I mean, you know, we all help each other. And when we get to one place, we go someplace else and help.
The only outsiders at City Hall were the media and a handful of National Guard troops.
By contrast, there's drought to the west and to the east. Firefighters in Los Angeles have been in a frantic battle with flames that have scorched 800 acres in Griffith Park. It's been declared under control and 50% contained. Fire Chief Douglas Barry believes they have the upper hand.
We're very comfortable and confident that we're going to be able to contain this fire completely within 24 hours, but that's a guarded confidence because of the fact the wind does kick up. We have challenges ahead of us.
In Florida, they're fighting more than 200 wildfires. Governor Charlie Crist looks hopefully to a storm offshore.
I was getting briefed on this storm right after we had declared the state of emergency, and Craig Fugate, who does a tremendous job, he said, "Well, Governor, what we need is a hurricane." I said, "Craig, bite your tongue. What we need is a tropical storm." And guess what? We got one.
Subtropical storm Andrea today became the first named storm of the season, but for now it remains offshore. Now this.
Chances are your old computer can't run all the latest software. Get into Office Depot today for a huge assortment of the newest computers and software, plus wireless printers, flat panel monitors, memory solutions, and more. Don't risk slowing down your business. Let Office Depot lend you a hand.
Whoa, Office Depot can lend you a hand.
A dozen for you today, hon?
Yeah, give me a few jellies, some Boston cream, a couple of crumbly peanuts, and some peace of mind, please.
Coming right up, sir.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford Lincoln and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles, because we notice everything. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. Now that's peace of mind.
And I'll have some total satisfaction as well.
See your dealer for limited warranty coverage details, or visit FordCPO.com. That's FordCPO.com.
Today, President Bush visited the Kansas town devastated by a tornado.
Gunning the throttle on a chainsaw, President Bush got a first-hand look at the devastation wrought by that tornado last week, which claimed 10 lives in Greensburg, Kansas. He walked through the debris of what used to be family homes, offering pledges of assistance and words of comfort to those who live there.
My mission is to today, though,
is to lift people's spirits as best as I possibly can.
And even the governor, Democrat Kathleen Sebelius, told reporters the federal response has been, in her words, amazingly good. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
The White House warned Congress today that President Bush would veto a House proposal that would fund the war through July, but give Congress the option to pull the plug after that. Vice President Cheney made a surprise visit to Baghdad. He arrived wearing a flak jacket and went to the U.S. Embassy, where at one point an explosion outside rattled the windows. Cheney met with Iraqi officials and expressed concern about plans for Parliament to take a two-month summer vacation.
I did make it clear that we believe it's very important to move on the issues before us in a timely fashion.
Increasing mortar attacks on the Green Zone have prompted a new order that all U.S. Embassy employees must wear protective vests and helmets when outside or in unprotected buildings. Interest rates remain stable. Today, the Federal Reserve decided again to leave its benchmark rate at 5.25%. It's a balancing act, says CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus.
The Fed remains a vigilant and on inflation watch, but they also have a weak economy to contend with, and because of that, a lot of analysts are expecting the Fed to hold off on the sidelines at least for the next few months before they decide what to do with interest rates.
In the meantime, the stock market's happy. The Dow jumped 53 points, closing at a new high of 13,362. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 866-40-GO-NOW. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-40-GO-NOW for all the exciting details. That's 866-40-GO-NOW. Call now.
Yeah, and it's about some very dark and difficult, complex subjects that I know people have a hard time with. Let me start with one of those little jibes that I picked up on. It was a reference to your own faith and spirituality and this chemistry or dynamic between taking on faith what our government has told us what occurred on 9/11, and having faith in your own judgment and your own sense of skepticism. And I guess some people think it's ironic or unusual that a theology professor is one of the leading thinkers in the 9/11 truth movement.
It does strike people odd at first, I think. And, you know, this Terry Allen, who writes for In These Times, explained my holding these views because I'm a theologian. She says, well, I guess he just takes things on faith. And then she turns around and takes on faith the 9/11 Commission report, which was authored, of course, by White House insider Philip Zelikow, the NIST report, which was put out by Bush's Commerce Department, and it didn't occur to her that she was taking all that stuff on faith. She claims she checked out the facts for herself, but when you read her stuff, you see she didn't.
Yeah. You also responded quite forcefully to Matthew Rothschild, who is the editor of The Progressive. He wrote a piece that really attacked the 9/11 movement and belittled us for seeking the truth. We spent an hour with him, and between me and the callers, we gave him a good run for his money. In your book, you do take on most of the issues he raised in his article, but I noticed that you didn't pick up or respond to an item that he had put in there as a Jewish American, that he felt that Larry Silverstein had been unfairly targeted primarily because of his faith and culture. And a number of my listeners, including Jewish listeners, took that in a very critical way and felt insulted by it. You chose not to pick that up in your book. Was that kind of an act of Christian charity?
I thought that was such a low blow. I mean, he was really reaching on that point because, you know, if there's anything I've been criticized for by fellow members, some fellow members of the 9/11 Truth Movement, it's because I have not blamed 9/11 on Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these criticisms come every so often. And so, you know, the very fact that I just mentioned that this Silverstein comment and the fact he's making some money off of this, he really, Rothschild really reached to say that that Griffin should have just said, well, the Jew did it.
Yeah.
You know, that was just off the wall, but so I didn't think I should bother to respond to that.
Well, I just wanted you to know it was noted by this observer.
Yeah.
There's so many different angles that I want to take here, and in the first segment I just want to kind of go through a couple of disparate items, and then I want to focus kind of scene by scene as you debunk the debunkers, the NIST report, the Popular Mechanics, and some of the other critics out there, including Alexander Coburn and The Nation magazine, and they deserve the criticism you've offered. First, I wanted to ask you about this remarkable video that surfaced a couple of months ago, which, if it is what we see on face value, is a real-time recording of the BBC's coverage of the events of 9/11. And the segment that surfaced that I viewed three times very carefully, and I've doctored some videos in my time, Dr. Griffin, and I didn't find any indication that this video had been doctored. And it shows that the BBC is reporting the collapse of Building 7 23 minutes before the event occurred. And in one scene, about 7 minutes before the event occurred, a BBC reporter in New York is doing what's called a stand-up. And the camera is on her, and behind her and over her shoulder is Building 7, as she says that Building 7 has collapsed, and proceeds to offer some of the theories for its collapse that surfaced from official sources afterward.
This video came out just as I was finishing up the book, you know, doing the index. It was literally the last couple days. And I went back and forth on whether to include it or not, and finally decided against it, whereas I did include a response to the BBC show called the Conspiracy Files 9/11, which, of course, it was just an atrocious show put out by the BBC. Just shows that the quality control has slipped there. In any case, the reason I didn't put it in was because it seemed to me at least possible that here's what happened. As we know, rumors started going around about noon that the building was going to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, incidentally, it was Giuliani's people who started the rumor, started telling people this. And just as it was Giuliani's people, and by that I mean the Office of Emergency Management, who had predicted, most strangely, that the Twin Towers were going to collapse. Giuliani himself reveals that on Peter Jennings. And so I dealt with that. And anyway, it occurred to me that what maybe happened was that rumor, you know, got changed, as rumors sometimes do, from Building 7 is going to collapse to Building 7 has collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know that that's true, and I certainly find the video very suspicious, but I try to limit the stuff I put in my books to stuff that seems really, really solid.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't quite pass the bar because of that possible interpretation.
I understand. And I described it, I think, carefully, that to my knowledge, it appears to be an accurate and undoctored tape.
Well, yeah, they didn't challenge the accuracy of the tape.
And there's some time markers on it that you know, show that it's 5 o'clock New York time, just 3 minutes after they have first reported that Building 7 has come down.
That's right. There seems to be no question about that. They don't challenge its authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just possible that it was based on a rumor getting changed.
All right, we're going to take a break and return with Dr. David Ray Griffin. The new book is Debunking 9/11, Debunking, an Answer to Popular Mechanics and the Other Critics. And we've got a lot to talk about over the course of this hour. If you'd like to join us, why don't you wait a segment and then pick up the phone and call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Okay, you want a website? What next? A lot of people can do the job, but you want innovation at a reasonable price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high-quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Peter B. Collins Show. My guest, Dr. David Ray Griffin. Debunking, 9/11 Debunking is his newest book.
But the world watched in horror. Two hijacked planes. destroy the Trade Center.
Well, maybe, Yoko.
You better believe it. You better deal with it. It's time to increase your chance.
I'll go along with the last part there, Yoko. That's Yoko Ono. She did an update of Give Peace a Chance in 2004, and reflecting the common notion, said that two airplanes hit the buildings and then they came down. We're seeking the truth about 9/11, and it certainly runs deeper than that. David Ray Griffin's new book, Debunking 9/11 Debunking, answers Popular Mechanics, the NIST report, that's the government agency that published a report of their investigation. He also returns to challenges to the work of the 9/11 Commission and some other folks who have offered critiques of those of us who continue to seek the truth about 9/11. Dr. Griffin, I think it's always worthwhile to spend a moment talking about conspiracy theories and that you are challenging the official conspiracy theory.
That's right. It's really remarkable, and I show in some detail how this propagandist use of conspiracy theory is just used repeatedly to put our view on the defensive and just presuppose that the official view is correct because it's not a conspiracy theory. But of course it is. A conspiracy is just when two or more people conspire in secret to do something illegal, and the only issue about 9/11 is who were the conspirators.
Mm-hmm.
And so since they're both equally conspiracy theories, I cite people in there who say, well, I was just shocked to find Griffin, this sober theologian, had become a conspiracy theorist. Well, of course I hadn't. I had just shifted from one conspiracy theory when the first year and a half I accepted the official conspiracy theory. And yet nobody thinks that's strange. They never said, well, you know, why were you a conspiracy theorist? Because they are too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that one-sided use. So I hope my book will do something to at least make people a little embarrassed about using the term in that one-sided way.
Yeah, I'm so tired of the dismissive and smarmy approaches to any coverage of the issues raised from people who clearly have no more proof than we do. One of the other stipulations I think is important to this discussion is that those of us who challenge the official story do not have to prove what actually happened in every detail in order to establish that the official story is not true.
That's right. We don't need our own theory. We just need to show that the official theory doesn't stand up to the empirical fact.
Mm-hmm.
And in my second chapter there, I take this on directly, and I show that Kane and Hamilton, the chair and vice chair of the 9/11 Commission,
right,
in their new book, Without Precedent, lay out what they consider the main criteria of what they mean by a conspiracy theory in the derogatory sense. And it has five characteristics. You start with your conclusion rather than with facts. You continue to adhere to theories that have been disproved by facts. You ignore facts that contradict your theory. You uncritically accept any dubious evidence, no matter how dubious, if it supports your theory. And then you have a disdain for debate. All five of those are characteristics of their theory and absolutely not characteristics of the 9/11 truth movement, which has been highly empirical.
Mm-hmm. One of the key indicators of the inaccuracies and in some cases falsehoods that have been fed to the American people are various timelines that have been constructed. And these timelines really help us understand where mistakes may have been made in people's recollections or compiling of reports, or where intentional prevarication may have occurred. And time again, if you'll pardon the pun, timelines are what underscore that what we've been told doesn't add up to the truth.
That's right. My first chapter deals with that in the most detail. And I think my first chapter is probably the part that people who are already familiar with most of the evidence will find the most new material, because there I was fortunate enough to get in email contact with two air traffic controllers at the Boston Center of the FAA, one who is currently still a controller and one who had previously been a controller, Robin Horden. And they supplied an enormous amount of material that I at least didn't know before that shows even more thoroughly than we knew before how flawed, how problematic the official timeline is and how we can be virtually certain that these tapes that the 9/11 Commission used, these NORAD tapes, that were then used in Bronner's Vanity Fair article.
Right, and we played some of those. Vanity Fair put them up on the website. It was very interesting to listen to them.
Yeah, but you realize you got little tiny snippets, and there were 30 hours there. And so I show, I think, in quite good detail these tapes cannot have to have been doctored.
And detailed is an indictment that would be sustained against David Ray Griffin. This is a very detailed book. It's a fascinating read. Debunking, 9/11 debunking. As we pick up in the next segment, we'll talk more about Michael Bronner's work at Vanity Fair and also consider the work of NIST and Popular Mechanics. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show with Dr. David Ray Griffin.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com. Stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
Maybe gun laws do matter. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. I've been reading the charging papers for the men accused with that plot to attack Fort Dix. They were clearly serious. And clearly crazy enough to do it. To quote one of their recorded conversations, "We are all crazy. That is what is needed." What they planned to do was kill as many as 100 soldiers by attacking at night. They had a plan to knock out power to the base. They trained in the woods with real guns and on a paintball course with fake ones. And then they set out to get the weapons they would need. Fully automatic machine guns, rocket-propelled grenades, and explosives. Except they couldn't get them. You see, it's been illegal to manufacture machine guns for personal use in this country since 1986. A dealer who buys machine guns and wishes to remain anonymous tells me the ban is so effective, they are now strictly collector's items and extremely expensive. The leader of the Fort Dix group finally did place an order for 5 Russian AK-47s and 4 M-16s, except the source turned out to be an FBI informant. Would they really have gone ahead with it? Who knows? But in the end, their arsenal consisted of 2 semi-automatic weapons, a 12-gauge shotgun, and a 9mm Beretta. They couldn't get the machine guns, and they canceled the order for the rocket-propelled grenade, apparently for fear of getting caught and going to jail for a long time. Quote, "I got 5 kids, so I don't want to go down. People catch me like they think I'm a terrorist," unquote. We may have a Second Amendment, but we still do control weapons like machine guns and RPGs, and those laws apparently do have an effect even on people like this. And I'm glad. Aren't you? Now this.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Don't you have enough stress in your life? Then why do you keep letting your vacuum cleaner torture you? Try an incredibly light, amazingly powerful Orrick XL, risk-free for 30 days. It's hard on dirt and easy on you, and you'll be done in a fraction of the time it takes to use one of those big clunkers. Call 1-800-989-4200. That's 1-800-989-4200. Or click on to Orrick.com. Now, how easy was that?
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is Dr. David Ray Griffin. His first book, you may recall, The New Pearl Harbor, raised important questions about the official narrative of 9/11 events in this country. And his newest book takes on those who have attempted to debunk the thinking of the 9/11 truth movement. It's called Debunking, 9/11 Debunking, subtitled An Answer to Popular Mechanics and Other Defenders of the Official Conspiracy Theories. We'll take some calls in a few minutes. If you want to grab a line, 888-5, Peter B. is our toll-free number, 888-573-8372 puts you through. Dr. Griffin, let me just start with Building 7. We talked a little bit earlier about the BBC report. And as an entry point for people who are new to the truth-seeking about 9/11, this appears to be the most obvious example of a plane that was not touched by an airplane, hijacked or otherwise, a building that collapsed in the afternoon at free-fall speeds, like the earlier collapse of World Trade Center Towers 1 and 2. Those of us on this side who believe that the 9/11 story doesn't hold up have to have deep suspicions that the building was brought down by a controlled demolition. What new information have you found? And let's take a moment here to permit you to challenge the debunking that came from Popular Mechanics and NIST relative to Building 7.
Well, their big claim now is that there's no problem here because even though it wasn't hit by a plane, enough debris came from the North Tower while it was collapsing to scoop out part of the south face of the building, and that was the equivalent from their point of view of being hit by an airplane. Well, one problem here is if you scoop out one side of the building, and if that caused it to fall, it should have toppled over. And yet the building comes down, straight down, in a perfect symmetrical way. And the only way that can happen is if all 87 of the columns fall apart or somehow are sliced or buckle simultaneously. And the idea that fire on a few of the floors could have caused all the... It's just so ridiculous. It's almost embarrassing to talk about it. Mm-hmm. To say that on many of the floors, simultaneously, all the steel columns failed simultaneously is just beyond belief. But that's the level of desperation they have. And another factor about this building is just looking at it and the video. There's good reason that many Americans don't even know the building has collapsed because they have very carefully kept videos of it off TV after that very first night.
It's rarely referenced in the coverage.
Yeah, when Dan Rather said, boy, that looks just like these buildings we've seen brought down by controlled demolition, it was never allowed on the air again. Now, this interesting thing, this Dutch demolition expert that one can watch on YouTube, Danny, I don't know how to pronounce it. In English, it would be Joe Winkle, starts with a J.
Mm-hmm.
And he's shown, he hadn't heard, even though he's a demolition expert, has his own company, he hadn't heard that Building 7 had collapsed too. And so some people showed him this building coming down, and he said, well, you know, that's a case of controlled demolition. And then they tell him what building it is, and he says, no, 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 impossible, that couldn't be. Finally, they convince him, and he says, well, okay, then those boys were very busy that day. So, you know, it's obvious to anybody who's an expert. And now we have, you know, these popular mechanics and NIST like to pretend like all the experts are on their side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, more and more and more technical experts are joining the movement. So now you have pilots for 9/11 Truth. You have
scholars
for 9/11 Truth, mm-hmm. scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice. You have an increasing number of intelligence experts and military experts and so on. And then in Switzerland, there are two people at the most prestigious institute in Switzerland, two engineering professors, structural engineering professors, who've both said there's no doubt about it that Building 7 was brought down by explosives.
And so if we accept that as at least a possible notion, and I believe that's what happened, but if we accept it as a possible notion, then we have to apply the same thinking and the same skepticism to the stories we've heard, including the NIST report, about the pancake effect that they claim brought down the two towers, 1 and 2.
Yeah, they're kind of confused about whether they hold the pancake theory or not. In some places they say, well, we reject the pancake theory. Other places they endorse it.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, one should a priori have even more skepticism about the official theory given history, because science is based on precedents. And Stephen Jones stresses this over and over and over, the scientific method.
And Jones is the physics professor at BYU.
Yeah, formerly at BYU, who was forced out.
That's true, yeah.
And he points out that you know, you can't just, you don't have a scientific explanation if you just theorize and say, well, it's possible it might have happened this way. You've got to show, either by experiment or by historical precedent, that this sort of thing could happen.
And it has to be repeatable for, you know, a real scientific conclusion, right?
That's right. And, you know, we have two different kinds of sciences. There are the historical sciences and the empirical repeatable sciences.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about physics, engineering, these kinds of things, you've got to have repeatability. And so if they're going to make this kind of claim that here we had this kind of process that initiated a total collapse of a steel frame building, it's got to somehow be repeatable. So one thing, you know, as Stephen and others have pointed out, you know, I had suggested, well, you know, we could take some old building that we wanted to demolish anyway, fly an airplane into it, get a big fire started, duplicate the Twin Towers as much as you can, and see if you can get this building to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stephen and others have pointed out, well, you know, the other way is build a model. You can build a model of these buildings and simulate the conditions. And so it wouldn't have to cost millions of dollars. You could do it
mm-hmm.
for maybe $100,000 and test this out. But, of course, nobody's interested in doing that, and yet we're spending hundreds of billions of dollars on wars based on the assumption that the official theory is correct.
We're talking with Dr. David Ray Griffin here on the Peter B. Collins Show. I want to talk for a moment about Michael Bronner, the Vanity Fair piece. It was based on excerpted recordings from NORAD and FAA sources that were filtered through the 9/11 Commission, and then that's where Michael Bronner acquired them.
No, the military gave them to him directly.
Oh, they did.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting, and this ought to make people a little suspicious that here's a guy, he was an associate producer for the movie United 93, which just repeated the story of the 9/11 Commission on that flight, which, you know, said that the order to shoot down wasn't even given until 15 minutes after the plane had crashed, even though Richard Clark, who was the terrorist czar at the time, it tells us in his book that he had gotten the shoot down order from Cheney about 15 minutes before the plane collapsed. And yet Bronner, just they tell this story. So it's probably no coincidence that the military chose him as a very safe person to give their tapes to.
And I acknowledged earlier that I've doctored some videotapes over the years. I've doctored more audio tapes. And with digital audio processing, it's very conceivable that you could take excerpts from the tapes and you could move parts around to shift the timeline. You could even shift the time markers that are embedded on these kind of archive recordings that you know, provided the audio outtakes that we have heard. So I have to say that your book very carefully takes them apart and shows the inconsistencies. And as I read that, I thought, well, somebody spent hundreds of hours in an audio lab with a couple of PCs, and they were able to basically recreate the story along the lines of the official version, although there are clearly some anomalies that remain.
That's right. So I do two things. I do quote Robin Horton, who, when he was at Boston Center, this is what he did. So he knows the technology and says this is very easy to make these changes.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, I show enough discrepancy between empirical fact that's verified in other ways and what these tapes say that I think you can't read this chapter without concluding these tapes have been doctored.
And also on a technical angle, you make the case in many places in the book that the argument that passengers use their cell phones to call loved ones on the ground simply cannot be true. Because if these planes were at altitudes as they were described at the time, the technology of the average cell phone at that stage simply could not complete a call and hold it from 30,000 feet.
That's right, and certainly not at 40,000 feet where United 93 was while passengers were allegedly making their calls. And so here is another place where the 9/11 truth movement that's been empirical, because this Key Dudney, who's a Canadian scientist who wrote a column for Scientific American for many, many years, so he's very well known and respected. He took little planes up and checked his cell phones,
mm-hmm.
and found that even in a small plane, single engine or double engine, you couldn't make a call above 7,000 or 8,000 feet.
And specifically, Dr. Griffin, many people look at Barbara Olson, a well-known Republican. She'd been on TV, married to the Solicitor General, and she allegedly made a cell phone call. And when it was shown that that couldn't have possibly occurred, they shifted to an airphone, one of those things in the back of the seat in front of you. And you did the research that showed that the 767s didn't have airphones on them.
Yeah, I didn't do the research. It was Ian Henschel and Roland Morgan who did this, but they shared it with me. They had mentioned it in the books, but they didn't quote all the emails. And so when you read the emails, it's very, very clear. And that United 757s did have seatback phones, so that Flight 93. They could have made seatback calls, airphone calls from that,
mm-hmm.
but the American Airlines, the ones that were built for American Airlines, did not have any. And furthermore, they clarified, they said, well, could there have been other phones on there that, you know, for the crew,
right,
that Barbara might have borrowed? They said there were absolutely no phones of that on the plane at all. The crew had other means of communication.
Right.
So Barbara Olson's call could not have been made from a cell phone. It could not have been made from an airphone. It could not have been made.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, we know the official story is false.
We're going to take a break and continue with Dr. David Ray Griffin. You've got to read the new book, Debunking, 9/11 Debunking, An Answer to Popular Mechanics and Other Defenders of the Official Conspiracy Theory. Some callers have been holding patiently, I hope. We'll get to you next, and you can join that conversation toll-free right now. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I remain your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the Tasty Planet Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I interview great guests, including national, regional, and local personalities that make our planet so delicious. And I want your feedback. It's simple. Go to www.tastyplanet.org, complete the survey, fill out a form, and you'll be automatically entered to win. That's all there is to it, and your info is safe with me. I won't use it for anything but this contest. So listen in on Saturdays from 1 to 4 p.m., and as Julia Child used to say, bon appétit!
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 AM, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 AM from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, then we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 10 minutes away from the hour. My guest, Dr. David Ray Griffin, a retired theologian and philosopher from Claremont University in Southern California. His newest book, Seeking the Truth About 9/11, is called Debunking 9/11 Debunking, an answer to popular mechanics and other defenders of the official conspiracy theory. It's out from Olive Branch Press, and I recommend it to anyone who really wants to find the truth. There's a lot more work to be done, but what David Ray Griffin has accomplished is really helping us understand the inconsistencies and the pure propaganda that has been fed to us from so many different sources in a concerted effort to really burn in the official mythology about 9/11 2001.
Yeah, this new development, Peter, is important because this book is not just more of the same. If people think, well, they've read some of my other books,
no.
Because the new thing is here. Before they were ignoring us, and we were just saying, you can't deal with all these facts. And many people could say, well, they don't respond to you because you're not worth responding to. They don't want to give you credibility. Of course, they could answer all your criticisms if they tried, but now they've tried. And now we can show they've tried and they failed, and they failed gloriously.
Indeed they have. Dave in the Pinnacles, thanks for holding on. You're on the air with Dr. David Ray Griffin.
Well, hi, Peter, and thanks a lot for coming on, Doctor. I really appreciate all you've done. Hey, on that morning, I was sitting in front of my TV, and as soon as it happened, I said, something's going on. That just couldn't happen. And then after I started reading a little bit about it, I was totally convinced. And what really got me was page 503 of the official report. The South Tower collapsed in 10 seconds. Now then, like you said, stated, Peter, a free fall is like a little under 10 seconds. So what I want to know is, how do they explain away the resistance? You know, you open up any grade school physics book or whatever, and it'll say right there, any resistance will slow a fall. Why did not the resistance of just scores and scores of stories not slow that fall?
Tons and tons of steel that could not have been affected by the fireball at the top
exactly,
of the building.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're absolutely
right.
We saw
a fireball outside of the building.
You're absolutely right to raise this, because this is a good candidate for the biggest problem faced by NIST and the one it does the worst job with. It tries. Here's its claim that, you know, when the plane hit the building, carved out this hole, and then the top floors then fell down on the floors below the hole, and then that caused the rest of the building to collapse at free fall speed. Well, as you were alluding to, that violates one of the fundamental laws of physics, which
you can
is
find
the,
a grade school book.
Yeah, yeah. We're just talking about basic Newtonian physics.
Yeah.
It's been with us for a long time. And all that steel, all that concrete, you can't, you know, no matter how big the top part was, and it wasn't very big relative to the rest of the building, no matter how big it had been, it could not crush through all that steel and concrete as if it weren't there, and yet that is what happened. It's like, I use an analogy, it's like a little sports car going along 60 miles an hour runs into a huge truck that stopped on the freeway and starts pushing the truck at 60 miles an hour.
Right.
Dr. Griffin, you also make the point that the official story has us believe that, you know, there was some resistance from the buildings, the Twin Towers, as the airplanes hit them. Yet the Pentagon, which had been heavily reinforced to withstand an attack by an airplane or a missile, you know, swallowed the plane up whole, we're supposed to believe.
We're supposed to believe. And a related fact is that there was no seismic signal from the Pentagon. Kim and Baum, these two professionals who were asked by the Army to come up with seismic studies of all four crashes, say, we got a good signal from the Twin Towers, each building, and from the crash in Pennsylvania, believe it or not, where this plane allegedly plowed into this very soft ground,
mm-hmm.
and yet hitting at ground floor, ground level almost, on this very strong reinforced building in the Pentagon, it doesn't even register, and yet it's the same, virtually the same size of plane as hits the Twin Towers.
Dave and Humboldt, you're next. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Peter. And, Professor, I'm long an admirer of your very objective, intelligent, rational efforts in this area. The evidence to me is overwhelming. I would mention but a few briefly here. The earliest days of PNAC, when they were first planning their invasions, they mentioned then, to get the people to support this, we will need to have a new Pearl Harbor type of event. That says something to me. Coincidence also, Chief of Security at WTC was Neil Bush, who had the good fortune
Marvin.
Resign.
Marvin Bush, not
Marvin
Neil.
Bush, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Had the good fortune to resign that job on 9/10/2001. So, and another thing, I've been a pilot for 40 years, and the technology exists today that if I have a recording of your voices, I can listen to you two right now, talk through this machine, and I can have you confessing to sinking the Lusitania in your own voices. So, that it does exist, and in my years as a pilot, I do know you can make calls from cell phones, and it wasn't at 40,000 feet, or they'd have overflown all the towers by about 35,000 feet. So.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. A quick comment from Sue in Santa Cruz. Go ahead, Sue.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if any research has been done to see if in the history of the fighter jets that were supposed to come and intercept all these planes, that this incident has happened before where all of these people were off doing their war games and everything like that all at the same time. Because it just seems too bizarre that they would all be off doing things on the very same morning. So, has that ever occurred? Can we check schedules back several years to see if that's ever happened before?
And actually, they were not all off. Syracuse, called in and said, look, we can have armed planes to you in 10 minutes if you need them. NEAD said we didn't need them. But in any case, if anything like this had happened before, you can be sure that defenders of the official story would be citing that as precedent and saying, well, look, it just happened again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So evidently there is no precedent for this.
All right.
But as I say, one thing I cite in Chapter 1, the official story is that there were only two bases with each one having two fighters on alert that to protect the whole northeast of the United States. And I show by quoting this fellow who still works at the Boston Center that he was calling all over, saying, well, let's pull planes from Syracuse, let's pull planes from Andrews, let's pull planes from Selfridge, Toledo. He knew there were planes available.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Griffin, thank you for your time today. Thanks for all the work you've put into the books you've written. I want to recommend the new one to our listeners. You can learn more about the 9/11 conspiracy theory that we've been sold and the search for the truth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.
The new book again is Debunking 9/11 Debunking. David Ray Griffin has been our guest this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. Visit our website, peterbcollins.com.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Carmo Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Carmo Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Carmo Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Carmo Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmo Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Carmo Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, then we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid Karma Valley Valero. Putting the service back in service stations.
Missouri River after storms last weekend that brought as much as 8 inches of rain in 24 hours. CBS News correspondent Cynthia Bowers reports from one hard-hit community.
The town of Big Lake is just that, a big lake under 2 to 3 feet of water. After nine levees caved under the pressure of the mighty Missouri, authorities say this community of 300 is a total loss.
It's a terrible thing.
So far, the Missouri River and its tributaries have spilled over at least 20 levees, 12-foot tall walls made of dirt, putting towns at risk from St. Joseph in the northwest all the way to St. Louis in the east.
Forecasters say it might take a week for the flood waters to recede. In the parched southeast, scores of wildfires are burning. Major General Douglas Burnett of the Florida National Guard says all available equipment has been mobilized.
We have over 400 high-wheel vehicle trucks ready to move out. We have 6 Black Hawk helicopters on the ground. More are on the way. They're fully engaged today in airborne firefighting operations.
CBS News correspondent Sandra Hughes brings us up to date on the situation in Los Angeles.
Right now, firefighters are gaining the upper hand on the Griffith Park fire. They are at 50% containment, but the problem still today is the heat and the humidity. Temperatures are in the mid-90s, and with 2% humidity, they still cannot afford to ignore even the smallest ember.
Dante's View, a terraced garden on Mount Hollywood, became Dante's Inferno as it was consumed by flames. In Riverside, California, an accused arsonist could face execution. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman has the story.
Raymond Lee Euler is accused of intentionally setting last fall's deadly Esperanza wildfire that killed 5 U.S. Forest Service workers. He was charged last year with 5 counts of first-degree murder. Now the Riverside County District Attorney says he will seek the death penalty. The DA calls Euler's action a callous disregard to the safety of the firefighters. During a preliminary hearing, witnesses testified that Euler boasted about setting the fires.
Marine One carried President Bush in for an aerial survey of Greensburg, Kansas, the town virtually demolished by a tornado that killed 10 people. Later on the ground, Mr. Bush said pictures don't do it justice.
Our role as government officials is to work with the state and local folks to get whatever help is appropriate here. Whatever help is in the law, be here as quickly as possible.
FEMA will send about 50 trailers. The president saw shattered buildings, a car embedded in the roof of a house, trees stripped of their branches, and a spray-painted sign that reads, "Please pardon our mess." Today on Wall Street, another record day. The Dow Industrial's up 53 points to 13,362. The NASDAQ gained 4 points. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. A very upset lady from California wrote, "As a cat owner, I really feel your ads discriminate against cats. There's no reason to single out cat hairs. Why not pick on dogs?" Well, madam, I own cats and dogs, and I can tell you, my Auric XL treats all pet hair equal. See for yourself, risk-free, for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Got pets? Get an Auric.
Hey, Mama, happy Mother's Day. Let's take your worries all away. Give you a special Mother's Day. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go of where to go this Mother's Day. Go out back, where the pasta is bold, the steaks are juicy, the chicken tender. It's a nice way of saying thanks. No worries.
Let's go out back tonight.
This Mother's Day, let go.
Every day is Mother's Day.
Go out back.
Interest rates are unchanged after the latest meeting of Federal Reserve policymakers. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato tells us they did as expected.
It has been nearly a year since the Fed did anything with rates. It is aiming here for a soft landing for the economy. It wants to make sure the economy is moving in a stable direction, that inflation is able to moderate. There are some analysts who believe that the Fed should be cutting rates right now. They worry that a recession is around the corner and that a cut would help alleviate that. No indication the Fed is moving in that direction. Right now, steady as she goes for the Fed.
The prime rate remains at 8.25%. Some analysts say no cuts are likely until early next year, and that depends on inflation. Ambulances were called to a San Jose elementary school today when a squirrel got into a classroom and bit an 11-year-old girl, then attacked an adult. The injuries turned out to be minor. No explanation for the squirrel's behavior except that it went nuts. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Chances are your old computer can't run all the latest software. Get into Office Depot today for a huge assortment of the newest computers and software, plus wireless printers, flat panel monitors, memory solutions, and more. Don't risk slowing down your business. Let Office Depot lend you a hand.
Whoa, Office Depot, can lend you a hand.
A dozen for you today, hon?
Yeah, give me a few jellies, some Boston cream, a couple of crumbly peanuts, and some peace of mind, please.
Coming right up, sir.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford Lincoln and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles, because we notice everything. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. Now that's peace of mind.
And I'll have some total satisfaction as well.
See your dealer for limited warranty coverage details, or visit FordCPO.com. That's FordCPO.com.
With a proud historical history, and we've all had dealings these days with Iranian academics. We talked about this last time. Industrialists, entrepreneurs, these are very clever people. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't have progressed to the point.
Now that's different, though, from an assertion that they actually have it.
Well, I get that feeling. I can't prove anything.
But wouldn't Ahmadinejad be bragging about it just to blow past all the bluster?
No, because it's a huge embarrassment. I don't think they know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that one of the things that has come out is the release of the British hostages?
Right.
Just at this moment in time, the last thing they needed was an additional problem that became embarrassing. They could have rubbed London's nose in the dirt endlessly. They could have done exactly the same to those 15 hostages as they did to the American hostages a generation ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. They let them go without a quirk. They don't want anything to interfere with something that's happening now. We don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Something is going on. Something, you know, they're far too cocky just to be, to have something.
So what should we believe, though, Al? Because we hear these claims from Ahmadinejad that they've advanced by tenfold, and then El-Baradei and the other experts tell us that, oh, that's an exaggeration. They can't get their centrifuges to run and to synchronize properly.
Well, Baradei made exactly the same statement that before Pakistan exploded its 5 atom bombs, and he also had a hell of a lot to say before the North Korean exploded the atom bomb. Secondly, there were 2 atom bomb tests in Pakistan some years ago in that northeast desert. The one was held in a great publicity event to let the world know that they had the bomb. The other one was in total secrecy. nobody knew. All they knew was that they picked up traces of a nuclear explosion. This is roughly about the same time, but not the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no the reason that is now being put forward is that the second tests were not a Pakistani bomb at all. The consensus amongst those that have studied the matter, and this includes global security, John Pike and Charles Fick,
mm-hmm.
is that it could have been the first test of the North Korean bomb. And secondly, we had the test the other day of the North Korean bomb, but it was below par. It was a half a kiloton, which is very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But that could, and it has been put forward by certain authorities, that could have been a testing for the trigger device of a thermonuclear bomb, which brings us to another threshold of nuclear capability altogether, because it's a very different matter building an atom bomb with a power of about 18, 20 kilotons, roughly what took out Nagasaki and Hiroshima,
mm-hmm.
compared to a thermonuclear bomb of 500 times that or 1,000 times that. Here we are talking big stuff.
Yeah.
Here we're talking about something that's going to level regions, never mind cities.
Mm-hmm. So if you have this well-placed suspicion that Iran has already developed some sort of a weapon, even a crude one, what do you think is the likely approach for the international community? We have these rounds of U.N. sanctions. There
have been
a lot of finger-pointing. But do you think ultimately somebody is going to have to take them out?
Well, this is a several-phased question. But in the first place, there's nothing we can do about it. Iran, you can threaten and you can jump and shout and scream as much as you like. Iran couldn't care two hoots. It's got more oil than it can handle. It's got money coming in. It's got your and my money coming in for the amount of money that we're paying for fuel now. It's got the largest natural gas deposit in the world. It has the means to acquire that which it needs. We've got a history of this from Rhodesia on. Iraq could buy what it liked on the open market. South Africa could before that. If Iran needs something, there are middlemen all over the place. And AQ Khan was one of them,
mm-hmm.
and a very effective middleman as well, because his spy agencies straddled the globe. He even, and I deal with this in quite a lot of detail in Allah's Bomb, he even hired, somehow or another, got his clutches into an Israeli Defense Force major.
Well, it's fascinating, the South African connection.
Too much of it now, and there's a lot more of it happening. Now, if you take this one step further, when the Israelis went into South Lebanon last summer,
mm-hmm.
they discovered a lot of high-tech material that was beyond their capabilities, including night vision equipment, very similar to that which is manufactured in South Africa. Not only that, but some of the globalsecurity.org pulled out some of the, has got diagrams on this, and it's on the web. You can pull it up, globalsecurity.org, that some of the missile structures of the Pakistani bomb and the North Korean bomb have a distinct South African color to them. There's something, there are certain aspects of it that are linked to the original South African missile program,
mm-hmm.
that was abandoned after, or just before Nelson Mandela took power in South Africa.
And this relates to the triggers?
No, it relates to the missiles delivery systems themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The launchers are distinctly South African.
Mm-hmm.
You can't miss it. They've been sold across the counter. This is highly illegal. South Africa is a signatory to all these treaties, and yet it's doing a deal with all these subterfusion type of conditions that we have the United Nations in place to stop. So never mind what Dr. Al-Baradei says. He's been wrong many times.
Well, and in your book, we might get to this later if there's time in the hour, you call into question some of his loyalties, particularly to Egypt, his fatherland, and whether he calls those shots squarely when it comes to Egypt's desire to join the nuclear club. Now, just about a minute before our first break here, Al Vinter, let's finish up on Iran and the level of threat that it poses at this moment.
What I haven't touched upon, and I'll mention this quickly,
sure,
is the fact that they don't need to enrich uranium. There's been so much smuggling going on of highly enriched uranium and plutonium in the last 20 years that they probably have rooms full of the stuff.
Hmm.
This business of enriching uranium is the long-term thing. It's for the future bombs.
And is it for show to try to challenge the West?
Well, it's part of the regional hegemony that they need to dominate the Middle East. And that said, the Arab states, as opposed to Iran, which is Persian, are aghast, absolutely aghast at what's going on, because they don't need to be dominated by Shiites.
Mm-hmm.
That Shiite-Sunni problem goes down very deep and very hard.
Well, we need to take a break. As we continue, I want to learn more about AQ Khan. We're going to talk about the South African connection. We'll talk about Israel's nuclear program. And we'll talk about some of the wannabes, particularly neighbors in the Middle East like Saudi Arabia and Egypt. This is a powerful new book from Al J. Venter. He's written 30 other titles, and the new one is called Allah's Bomb. He's an expert on weapons and defense systems and has been writing about this for many, many years for Jane's International Defense Review and other publications. He's with us this entire hour, and your calls and comments are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
May 14th, 9 a.m. to noon. Thanks for joining us. The Ed Schultz Show, where America comes to talk.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
All right, here we go. Let's take a look at the latest. We're going to talk about Capitola, northbound 1 after Park Avenue. It's a crash. A solo vehicle went into some bushes on the right shoulder. Good news, CHP is on the scene. Not really causing much of a problem, but apparently folks hitting their brake lights to check out the activity. Also want to mention the problem in Monterey, Holman Highway. That would be Highway 68 at the Skyline Forest Drive. We have a two-vehicle accident. And apparently it's been cleared to the right shoulder, CHP taking a report. So nothing too much to get worried about. Highway 17 looking good. No major stalls or accidents to tell you about there. A little bit of road work you need to know about, like in Salinas, Market Street, northbound between Salinas and Market Street. The right lane closed for electrical work daily from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. The support brought to you by Super 8 Motels. A good cup of coffee is the perfect way to start your day. Go to Super 8 Motels.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest this hour is journalist Al J. Venter, V-E-N-T-E-R. He's been covering military affairs for some 40 years. He's written about 30 books and is a correspondent for the Jane's Defense Group of Publications. His new book is out in hardcover, Allah's Bomb, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. And one of the things that indicates that Al J. Venter is an expert is he knows how to pronounce nuclear. Al, what do you make of these Texans and other Americans who, you know, take a simple word and add a syllable to it?
Well, it's embarrassing, to be quite honest. But it's not only that. We've got words like, I must take the mickey here. You guys call it herbs. It's spelled H-E-R-B-S, by the way.
Right, yes. Well, I want you to take a couple of minutes here. We have about 6 minutes in this segment. And I'd like you to tell us about A.Q. Khan and the network he developed. And in the chapter that starts to describe him, we start off at 109 Ocean View Drive in Cape Town, South Africa. Explain.
Well, A.Q. Khan originally qualified as a metallurgist, a very clever man, a Pakistani scientist in Holland. He took his doctorate and he went on and he worked in various sensitive organizations, increasingly so, because metallurgy was linked to the enrichment of uranium. And while he worked for Urenco, European Uranium Organization, it was a multinational setup, he stole all the blueprints, and with the collusion of the Pakistani embassy in The Hague, these were shipped back. When they eventually got onto him, they started to get onto him, he got on the plane and went home. Mm-hmm. He then set up the Pakistani nuclear program.
Just a quick aside, has he ever been directly linked as an employee of the ISI, or was he above that?
Who would know, because that's such a secretive organization. But they would have kept, there would be a link, there's no question.
Yeah, okay.
So he then set up, Pakistan, most favored nation, he was able to make contact all over the place. And over the years with Urenco, he worked with a lot of people, and quite a few of his contacts then ended up working for him. There's a lot of money being thrown around. It was a very attractive option, the same way that Saddam Hussein, as we found out after the first invasion under Colin Powell, had employed Germans and others to try to build his nuclear weapons program.
And Pakistan's urge was to develop parity with India.
They'd taken a terrible beating in one of their wars, and this was a huge humiliation for the Pakistani nation.
Right.
And A.Q. Khan wanted to put that right. And one way to do it was to gain parity at a nuclear level, which he achieved. And he built up these connections with a headquarters in Dubai, a sort of a clearinghouse. He had British people involved there. His agents would go out and they'd buy all the things that were necessary. And Ashraf Ghani, the man in Cape Town, the former Israeli Defense Force major, who actually used to read the Torah at the local Seapoint synagogue, was recruited. Now, we don't know how this was done, but my goodness, for somebody to be recruited by an Islamist into something that was quite obviously had use, never mind dual use, it had application against Israel. It was done very successfully. And one of the things, we don't know how many items he acquired, but we do know that he tried to buy 200 triggered spark caps, which have a dual use purpose. They are used medically to pulverize kidney stones, but they're also used to set off nuclear weapons, atomic bombs. And The order went out to Elmer Perkins, an American company, and at about this stage, he had drawn a lot of attention because he was making huge money. This was one of many shipments that have been sent through to South Africa. Now South Africa is a new rainbow nation, all in the clear, everything's rosy, and it was immediately transshipped to Dubai, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he somehow persuaded to come and take a vacation in the United States, and they grabbed him when he got off the plane in Denver. Well, he's told the Americans everything. You've got a pretty lean sentence, and I think because of the cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out another operation involving AQ Khan was the building of a uranium enrichment plant at a factory outside Johannesburg, which was to the point where it was packed into 11 containers and ready to be shipped as a water purifying plant through Mozambique to Dubai. This is quite remarkable. Up to now, governments are involved in these things. Yet here we have a commercial company with specifications from Pakistan to build a uranium enrichment plant intended for Libya. And that's where the wheels came off, because if you remember, Gaddafi was caught with a consignment mm-hmm. of centrifuges on a ship.
Right.
And I gather that he was told, you either tell us what everything or else we'll send the Marines in. It'll take about an afternoon to clean that lot up.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody denies that, of course. You don't want to, you know, rub the man up the wrong way, but that's what happened. And
all right,
then
let's pause here, Al. It's time for a break, and we'll pick up there after the break. Al Venter is our guest, Al J. Venter, because we honor middle initials here at the Peter B. Collins Show, and his new book is powerful and detailed and well-sourced with a wide range of sources. Allah's Bomb, it's called, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955. Or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
If you have a hard time losing weight, especially stubborn fat around the hips, thighs, and stomach, you need Affinity's Lose and Snooze. You can actually lose weight, even while you sleep. The Advanced Lose and Snooze formula in combination with the one-day diet plan will accelerate your weight loss dramatically. Lose and Snooze with natural ingredients is scientifically designed to help you lose up to 20 pounds a month while still eating your favorite foods. Start reshaping your body. Fit into that new wardrobe and lose those stubborn pounds safe and fast, even while you sleep. Try Lose and Snooze risk-free today. Buy two bottles of Lose and Snooze and you'll get a free supply of the one-day diet. If you are not completely satisfied with your weight loss within 30 days, simply send back any unused portion for a full refund of your purchase price. No questions asked. So start taking off those stubborn pounds today, even while you sleep. Call right now, 1-800-985-3668. That's 1-800-985-3668. Call now.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
This hour, my guest is a military affairs correspondent who's been covering the beat for more than 40 years. His new book is called Allah's Bomb, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. We're talking with Al Venter. Billy Squire, the music of the moment. It's called Everybody Wants You. And when you've got nuclear technology, blueprints, and raw materials, you're very much in demand in many parts of the world. And that's really the package that AQ Khan offered to many nations that want to join the nuclear club. And Al Venter's book, Allah's Bomb, offers a great deal of information about A.Q. Khan, a murky figure to most of us here in America. We might mainly know that he retired in comfort a few years ago, and the U.S., despite all of its sputtering about trying to clamp down on terrorists who might be able to acquire a nuclear weapon, has made so far almost no effort to interview Mr. Khan and try to understand the details and the lengths to which he was able to proliferate to other nations. And that's where my interest in him has been sparked. And you get a lot of information, as I said, well-researched and well-sourced in Al Venter's book. So let's pick up where we were before the break, Al, in talking about Khan, the way he developed his network, clearly with the support of the Pakistani government. But he also appeared to have side deals, and it's not clear the extent to which Pervez Musharraf in particular knew the details of what Khan and his affiliates were doing.
I'm pretty sure that Musharraf knows today what went on, but you mentioned earlier the Pakistani intelligence organization. They definitely have kept him under wraps because the Americans have been trying for years to speak to Khan. And he's the one person in the world that could tell us immediately whether Iran has got the bomb or not, or how far they are developed in that regard, how far they're moving. We come back to this uranium enrichment plant that was built at the factory near Johannesburg for Libya. That trial, the two people involved, two of how many, who knows, is being held in secret. And this underscores the suggestion made by many people already that the South African government knew very well what was going on, because the amount of money that was being transferred internationally from Libya, we're talking millions per transfer.
And to be specific, this is not only the apartheid government,
but it continued
under Mandela and his successors.
Yes, but these, you know, in the time that they were in the wilderness, there were a lot of Asian South Africans involved with them, and these people made close contacts with Saddam Hussein, with Iran, Libya, the rest of them, which they've maintained over the years.
Israel too, right?
It's been very useful to them.
Mm-hmm. Israel too?
No, Israel, after the Israel has dropped out, they're very, very, South Africa is very anti-Israel.
Mm-hmm.
They barely have diplomatic relations. They're still an embassy in Pretoria, but it's rocky.
Right, but when it comes to nuclear issues, did Israel benefit from the South African connection over the years?
I think it was the other way around. Apart from yellow cake, which South Africa supplied in large amounts, where they did cooperate and did very well was on the missile program. South Africa developed a medium range, a very, very, very sophisticated medium range intercontinental ballistic missile, and the tests they did were accurate to within a couple hundred meters.
Mm.
That stuff was closed down. That entire plant, 600 people, scientists, technicians, was closed down at the behest of Washington after Nelson Mandela took power. And as I think we talked once before, the mullahs were waiting across the road when they walked out of the building.
Yeah.
That entire lot decamped to Iran, and that is a catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
Because many, not only that, there's other sophisticated weapon systems which have gone there. And as I said, some of these have been picked up in Hezbollah hands.
All right, coming back to Khan and the Pakistani government and the ISI, its equivalent of the CIA.
Yes.
Do we know if Khan was freelancing when he made deals with Iran, Libya, North Korea, or was that sanctioned by the highest levels of the Pakistani government?
I think it began very well under the ISI, probably the intelligence unit, although we don't know to what extent. But then, like all these people, they get greedy. And all sorts of deals were made. When you read through the book, you'll see that the organization, KQ Khan's organization, became so big. He had so many agents that he had individuals competing for the same contract in places like Malaysia, Indonesia, Bahrain, and elsewhere. That the money there was no object. So obviously, the human element crept in, and that eventually led to the downfall of the system because it became too big. There too many people were getting involved in a program that Al-Baradi, the International Atomic Energy Agency head, said was like a conveyor belt of nuclear equipment. You submitted your shopping list in the morning, and you were told by evening what was available, what it would cost, and how long would it take to get it.
That sounds like Amazon.com.
Well, you got the message. Unfortunately, it got out of hand completely. Now, which brings us to Al-Qaeda. We know that Al-Qaeda, and I deal with this as well, has interest in nuclear matters, but they don't have the industrial infrastructure that they need, not now.
Mm-hmm.
But they were involved. There's a lot of people have been involved in studying nuclear physics. They had their own website, and they had a very sophisticated website, as a matter of fact. Not all of it was true to form. There were a lot of inaccuracies, some mistakes, but there were people involved that knew what they were talking about, and uranium enrichment was one of them. The detonation of nuclear weapons was another. But the documentation that was picked up after the fall of Afghanistan, hard drives and hard copy were found by the Roomful. And this was analyzed by the Americans, and they know, they have a pretty good idea of what, which direction Al-Qaeda was taking in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
They do have a huge interest. This is their one strength in the radiological bomb, the dirty bomb, as they call it.
But it seems more likely that given the loose security in the former Soviet Union, and Condi Rice slipped the other day and referred to Russia as the Soviet Union.
Yeah. difficult.
That, and with the cash that bin Laden has or has access to, wouldn't it be easier for them just to buy, a suitcase nuke or some something that could be used as a dirty bomb that would easily be acquired on the black market?
Yes, it would be. But this brings me back to my old friend, Dr. Nick von Willich, who was on the board of governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency. He made the point, and I quote him, that the Iranians are a remarkably patient people. they aren't looking. The game of chess, I believe, originated in the old Persia. And they play six moves ahead. They're not worrying about the bomb that they might detonate in the desert tomorrow or next year or whatever. It's the long-term proposition. They are looking to see the reestablishment of the old dynasty that made them one of the greatest nations the world has ever known. And they're doing it piece by piece. Now, they have got, there's no question, they have got plutonium and highly enriched uranium in quantity over the years from the former Soviet Union and the surrogate states. But they are looking ahead. If they are to become a major nuclear power, they don't need one bomb or six. They need many more. Mm-hmm. Israel is said to have about 200, of which most are thermonuclear. This is a long-term process, and it's not. This is the reason why they are doing what they're doing, and why it's all been done in secret.
Mm-hmm.
We know about Natanz, we know about Iraq, we know about Isfahan. What we don't know are the other 30 or 40 sites. We also know that the Isfahan site is a half a mile underground, mm-hmm. under this big city, which is impervious to thermonuclear attack.
Well, and there would be...
You could drop a bomb right on top of it. It's going to affect what's going on half a mile down below.
And you'd have massive civilian casualties if you did.
Yeah, and they are banking on this. But you're not dealing with rationality, yeah? This is the initiator, the Iranians, under with Hezbollah as their surrogate in Lebanon, the initiator of the car bomb concept, which is now widespread. You know, this is not a logical thing. This is, you can't rationalize with people that send 15,000 children into the minefields as they did in the war against Saddam Hussein to clear the minefields that the infantry could follow afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
These people are not rational. Very clever. They are not logic in one of some of the things they do.
Alventer, let me zoom out for a moment here and ask about the bigger picture. You cite a report from Dr. Al-Baradei in October of 2006 that apart from 30-something other countries interested in acquiring nuclear parity, the half-dozen Arab states in the hunt include Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and Algeria. Touch on each of those, if you could, in, you know, just in passing, about the state of development either of a nuclear capability or other WMD. And then my question is, are we looking at a new Cold War in the Middle East?
We're looking at a nuclear race, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll deal with them quickly because there's quite a lot to say. But Egypt has become thoroughly engrossed in that concept of gaining nuclear parity. It's commissioning huge deals with the Soviet Union, and part of the deal is for its students to be educated at Russian nuclear establishments, academic establishments studying nuclear policy. Saudi Arabia, big question. Are we in a situation where they've got it? The consensus is yes, that they bought them for cash, billions worth of money, from the Pakistanis originally, and they're in silos in a town, which I mentioned in the book, which is about 100 miles south of Riyadh.
Mm-hmm.
Algeria has already had a nuclear weapons program. That was put on hold some years ago, but there's talk, the Spanish intelligence agency have said that it has been activated again. Syria, we don't know. It's a hugely secretive organization, but they have indicated that they would like to gain nuclear parity.
As I recall from the book, you suggest that they have some missiles that are tipped with nerve agents?
Well, yes. This is something we've known about for a long time. The VX and Sarin is something that they have on their southern border with Israel. They use this as a threat against an invasion, and it's quite successful because the Israelis, they could take out most of them, but you only need one of these missiles to drop in a populated area in any Israeli city, and you're going to have fairly substantial casualties. These are deadly nerve gases. They're not to be trifled with.
Mm-hmm.
Syria is the dark horse. It's very close at the moment to Iran. Unfortunately, it works in cohesion, dominating and controlling whatever Hezbollah mm-hmm. does south Lebanon.
Now, with these issues in mind, what is your best advice to the U.S. in terms of engaging in at least tough diplomatic exchanges with Syria and Iran, or do you believe the Bush administration's freeze-out approach is effective?
I don't think you can do anything. You know, I'm not an admirer of what's going on at the moment in Washington, but I don't think that that you can do anything with Syria. It's a sort of an intransigent country that marches to the beat of its own drum. It's not a very efficient military country. They lost 98 of their planes the last time they took the air against the Israelis, without the Israelis losing one. I'm going back quite a few years here, but they want back the Heights, Golan, and they could end up doing something stupid. And again, it could be a preemptive. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about it. I was in Damascus a while ago, and unfortunately, I was kept under very close surveillance. So there's
they have some minders for Al Venter, huh?
As a matter of fact, I had an email returned to me today saying that as a result of all this, that the South African NIA, National Intelligence Agency, what a terrible blunder. They sent back a message and email saying that it would be delivered at a later stage. My emails are being monitored by, and I'm living in North America, being mm-hmm. monitored by South African National Intelligence Agency.
Well, I'm sure the NSA's got a file on you, too, Al.
Oh, no question. Very big one.
We'll take a break and continue. Powerful book, lots of information that we don't have time to discuss on the air. Pick it up and read it. Allah's Bomb, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. We're talking with British journalist Al J. Venter here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the Old Granary Building, just 2 blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Hey everybody, let's take a look at the latest and start off with a little bit of activity working. Well, the CHP is saying not a whole lot of problems. In fact, we're going to just tell you about some road work, and we'll check in with CHP in a second. But looks like we have, Santa Cruz northbound 1 at M Line. The off-ramp is closed 24 hours a day for scheduled road work, and that goes from... It looks like it's going to be scheduled for the 31st of December. All right, now CHP telling us about, let's check in right now, a problem just being reported. This is southbound 1 just before Morrissey Boulevard in Santa Cruz. It is a sedan. It looks like the driver apparently went out of is out of gas. Could be in the center divide, maybe partially blocking the left lane. That is the latest from CHP. Also want to mention that we do have... another problem on Highway 17, a stall just before the summit.
Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're talking with British journalist Al J. Venter, 40 years of covering defense issues, and, you know, they spell defense with a C. Allah's Bomb is the new book, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. Al Venter, did Muammar Gaddafi in Libya give up their quest to become a member of the nuclear club because the U.S. invaded Iraq?
There's a sensitive issue, that one. There's a lot of worry. You know that Iran became very nervous after the second invasion of Iraq, which is why they opened up to the International Atomic Energy Agency, surprisingly. They admitted to a lot of things, including the fact that they've been busy with nuclear things for almost 20 years. Iran also got very nervous, which after the invasion, they got this ship called the BBC China, strange name, was intercepted by a NATO naval task force and found all the centrifuges found. And I think that there was enough wallop in the American threat to come clean for him to do that. There's no question. He was very nervous. But
Bush has tried to spin it that the example that we set with Saddam scared the bejesus out of Gaddafi.
No, well, I'm sure it did. It's no question that his entire career of international terrorism came to an abrupt halt. He'd been working in this sort of thing now for 30 years, and he had jolly good reason to stop, because he did think that the Marines were going to go in. At that stage, America could do pretty well much as it pleased. That's not the case anymore.
All right. We're going to take a call. Thomas from Santa Cruz, thanks for checking in. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Al Venter.
Yeah, hello, Peter, and hello, Al.
Hi.
Hello, Dave.
I was listening to your conversation with interest and trying to take in what you're saying. But the thing that disturbs me most about the whole situation now is the lack of, seems to me, speaking honestly about American and British foreign policy for the last 40 years, which is a great big cause of why the so-called terrorists hate us and want to attack us. And this lack of honesty seems to me to keep us buried in an ever, never-ending road to hell.
Well, I can't agree with you more, but you must understand, I've been around a little bit longer than you, is that foreign policy is war by other means, and it is a succession of lies. Unfortunately, that's the way it's always been, and if you look back in history, you'll find that I'm not talking through my nose. But more important, and you cannot ignore the fact that no matter what America does, no matter what Britain does, there is a huge groundswell of resentment against the West. I have a very good friend who I quote in the book, Stephen Orff, who gave me all the material on the nuclear web site of Al-Qaeda. And we discussed this very point. And Stephen, who's fluent in Arabic, and he spends a lot of time, he reads, writes it, he's a major authority, and curiously, as a Brit, he's a lecturer at West Point. He made the point that there's a tremendous hatred for everything the West stands for, and it stems primarily from the amount of sexual license that we allow our societies, and right or wrong, you know, I'm not there to judge, but this is the way they perceive it.
Yeah.
They see us as decadent, rotten, to be destroyed against all the will of Allah.
Thomas, thank you.
I would like to respond to that.
Okay, go ahead quickly, please.
Okay, well, you know, I don't know much about their sexual preferences. I do know some, but not that much about how they really feel about it. But when he says he's been around a lot longer than me, maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. I'm 56, and I've spent the last 4 years deeply studying and reading and watching videos.
Right.
And they don't hate us primarily for our sexual preference. They hate us for the way we've treated them, take advantage of them economically for their resources.
Yeah, you're right in that regard as well.
That's way more than they hate us for sexual, and we're not addressing that.
That's
what keeps the hate coming. And when we address that, maybe the hate will stop. And maybe our insane way of trying to club the world into subservience will stop, and maybe then we'll have some peace. So I wish people would quit, stop not addressing this issue, and quit sidetracking it with sexual stuff. Sure,
well,
there's an element of that, but that's not
okay,
the main reason.
Thomas, thank you.
We've got a couple
of minutes
to talk, and I could...
Go ahead, Al. Go ahead, Al. We're listening.
Right, so we've got a couple of minutes, and it's impossible to, you know, this is a subject for debate. That it's a serious matter. Our caller is quite right. There are many facets to this thing. It is something that goes far beyond the sex. But the sex thing is, look, the whole Islamic society is dominated by sex. They put their women into purdah, the way they treat them. So let's not limit that aspect either.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's something that needs a much longer time and many, many more points made than the 2 minutes that we have.
Understood. And so with that in mind, let me just jump to my final point. You quote a national intelligence estimate of the United States with this comment. We assess that the Iraq Jihad is shaping a new generation of terrorist leaders and operatives. Perceived jihadist success there would inspire more fighters to continue the struggle elsewhere.
We have an example today. The Saudis have foiled an attack on their oil fields, a massive. They brought in 172 attacks. BBC reporters on the web.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these people were trained to fly aircraft. They were intending to cripple the entire Saudi oil output. That was nipped in the bud. You're quite right. They nipped this one in the bud. There are others, and they're waiting.
And my bottom line is that the U.S. invasion of Iraq has made the world less safe.
Oh, yes, there's no question about that. No, I propagated it. I'm as guilty as anybody else. I thought it was right because I had been studying this situation for many years, and we know that Saddam Hussein had tried to develop the atom bomb. We had 20,000 people working. All this was uncovered by the United Nations. It's in the open domain. You can look it up on the web. He had huge weapons of mass destruction programs before. We made the mistake by thinking that he had them again.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much. Al J. Venter, a powerful book. I recommend it to my listeners. Allah's Bomb, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you too, Peter.
All right, take care. We'll do it again.
Will, be nice. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. We archive our programs at peterbcollins.com so you can listen later.
Hi, Sheila Gale here with 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Addiction and Recovery Talk, Saturdays 4 to 5, now expanding to Wednesday evening 7 to 8. Taking shame and blame out of addiction, we take responsibility and treat it as the disease that it is. Great guests and great call-ins. Addictions, 12-Step Talk, it's about time. Now twice a week, Wednesday evening 7 to 8 and Saturdays 4 to 5. Brought to you by Sun Street Centers, building healthy lives in Monterey County. Sun Street for recovery and prevention.
We want to welcome Assemblywoman Ana Caballero back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you very much for the invitation.
We are so glad to have you on. We were at the victory party for you, and you were so happy, and rightfully so.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, right up until you asked me to leave the party. You and Lucy, that was it.
Well, it was the dancing on the table that got you. The TV cameras were there. It just didn't look right.
So. I got you.
The show on KRXA 540 AM.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones, everything so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. NPG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Hi, Sheila Gale here with 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Addiction and Recovery Talk, Saturdays 4 to 5, now expanding to Wednesday evening 7 to 8, taking shame and blame out of addiction. We take responsibility and treat it as the disease that it is. Great guests and great call-ins. Addictions, 12-Step Talk, it's about time. Now twice a week, Wednesday evening 7 to 8 and Saturdays 4 to 5, brought to you by Sun Street Centers, building healthy lives in Monterey County. Sun Street for recovery and prevention.
We want to welcome Assemblywoman Anna Caballero back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you very much for the invitation.
We are so glad to have you on. We were at the victory party for you, and you were so happy, and I rightfully so.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, right up until you asked me to leave the party. You and Lucy, that was it.
Well, it was the dancing on the table that got me.
I thought so.
The TV cameras were there. It just didn't look right. So.
I got you.
The show on KRXA 540.
CBS News, I'm Bill Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540.
Water seemingly everywhere along the Missouri River, where communities are enduring their worst flood since 1993. Thousands of people have fled their homes. CBS News correspondent Peter King filed this report from Lavassie, Missouri.
Straight ahead of me, about 100 yards down here on Main Street, two-men in a rowboat. That's the only way you can make it down that way, and they're heading down to look at their homes. There are about 15 to 20 homes down this way. All of them are underwater, but there is a sign of progress. You can tell by looking at the White House right next to where that boat is, and you can see a dark line around it. That dark line indicates where the water was just a couple of hours ago. Now it's starting to come down. Peter King, CBS News, Levesey, Missouri.
In Southern California, helicopters have been dumping water on the wildfire in Griffith Park that's burned 800 acres. They've made progress.
This is Steve Futterman in Los Angeles. The weather conditions have improved somewhat. The winds are not as strong. It's a bit cooler. All this is allowing firefighters to get the upper hand on the blaze. Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa.
At this time, the fire is under control and 50% contained.
No homes are in imminent danger, and residents who were asked to leave are now being allowed back in. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
The tinder dry southeast has more than 200 fires burning. Florida Governor Charlie Crist made an aerial survey today.
When you come over and you actually fly over it and you see it, it brings it home to you. And my heart goes out to the people that are close to where this is occurring.
Crist was encouraged by the formation of subtropical storm Andrea in the Atlantic, but Dan Brown at the National Weather Service says, don't get your hopes up.
We're not expecting a great deal of rain from Andrea. We're only expecting maybe half an inch of rain over most of the southeast coastal areas. There could be a little bit higher amounts along some of the immediate coast, but really we're not expecting that much in the way of relief for the wildfires.
In Georgia, a fire in the Okefenokee National Wildlife Refuge grew to more than 100,000 acres, making it the biggest fire in that state's history. The Fed has decided yet again to leave interest.